Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there! It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky. Black Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching live on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, and as you likely know by now,
God, I hope you know by now,
we are dedicating short episodes of the Eye on College Basketball Podcast to some of the top-tier prospects leading up to the 2022 NBA draft that is scheduled for next week, June 23rd. We've already done Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, Jabari Smith, Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, Shaedon Sharpe, Ochai Agbaji. Now we turn our attention to Arizona's Benedict Mathurin. I have him going 7th overall in my latest mock draft. Dead leg, is that too high, too low, or just about right?
Come on, Duke.
Again?
Just about right.
His range feels, Mathurin feels like 6 is the ceiling and 10 is the floor. I think that's, I'd be very surprised if he went as high as 5. And I'd be very surprised if he was still there sitting at 11. He has been trending consistently toward this status for months and months and months. By the middle of last season, Ben Mathurin was clearly Arizona's best player. Now, he was part of the class with Azulis Tabellis, Kirk Creasa, and Dalen Terry, who's also in this draft class. Arizona's lost a whole bunch of dudes. Like, we're not going to do episodes dedicated to Dalen Terry. He could be a first-round pick. Christian Coloco could go anywhere from 25 to 40. He's going to get drafted as well, and Mathurin's the prize of this class here. But he ascended. I mean, Azulis Tabellis, who's a big and is a much different kind of player, he was the better player as a freshman. He was considered to be the best player in the class. And then Mathurin slowly but surely came along and just proved to be what, you know, they hoped he would become. And he was really a year ahead of schedule. He's from Montreal, Canada. Montreal, one of the best cities in North America. And as a sophomore, shot 37% from 3, 52% from 2, is a tremendous athlete. It will be a very good two-way player, you would have to think. We are getting into a portion of these draft profiles where I'm not going to say with 100% conviction he's going to hit and stick for a decade, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did. He is a tier below some of the other guys we've talked about. We are doing his episode after we're doing the Ochai Agbaji one, but he is by most indications going to be taken before Ochai Agbaji. And yet I was having this exact conversation with an NBA scout earlier this week, cause we were getting to talking about, you know, your thoughts on Agbaji and where he should go. And he's an older player. I mean, Mathurin's not even, he's about to turn 20, literally, but he'll turn 20 days before the draft happens there. And yet I find myself saying, I think I trust Agbaji more overall, which isn't to say anything about Mathurin. I just, he's 6'6", 210, true wing, you know, good handle, you know, nice shot. The shot is takes a little bit long to develop. It starts low. High release, maybe some tweaking that can be done there, but a clear-cut top 10 pick. I do like the eval here. It'll be interesting to see who takes him and how he is used, because he's pretty adaptable, but he might be a guy who enters the NBA having come off this really strong. He was best player in the Pac-12 last season, but I'm not convinced that he is going to be an immediate impact player. It might take him a few years to really find his footing, develop into something that, you know, he could be a top 3, top 4 guy on a roster.
I think he can play as a rookie, like play meaningful minutes for a good team if he is selected by a good team. You know, obviously in the range where he's probably going to be picked, there's more bad teams than good. That's the way the lottery works. But I could see him playing meaningful minutes as a rookie for a good team. Like you said, still 19, so young-ish for a sophomore. Still one of the younger players in the draft. 6'6" wing, 6'9" wingspan, 8'8" standing reach. He averaged 17.7 points, 5.6 rebounds, 2.5 assists in 32.5 minutes per game this past season. In 2 years at Arizona, I trust the shot. He shot 38.3% from three in two seasons, made 36.9% of his 6.1 attempts per game this past season. And so obviously he had a better percentage on fewer attempts as a freshman, but a 2 year college sample size says he's a legitimate shooter. Like you mentioned, high release. I think that's ideal. The mechanics are mostly strong. I don't think there's really a lot you got to fix there. Would you like it to be a little quicker? I guess, but a 6'6" guy who releases it at a high point, you know, it's a good place to start. I think the shooting is a translatable skill, a strength. He, as you said, is from Montreal. He's the latest great Canadian prospect, and there's been a lot of those over the past decade. I guess with the way these NBA finals are unfolding, Andrew Wiggins being a nice example of that. Consensus All-American this past season. Pac-12 Player of the Year. Simply put, he's one of many, like Obagi, athletic wings who can shoot in this draft, and those guys are really valuable in the NBA right now. You can't have too many of them. You know, he's can catch lobs, dunk on, had the, you know, murdered Eddie Lampkin in the NCAA tournament.
Top five player of the tournament, absolutely, yes.
Christian Coloco, if I remember correctly, caught it on the block and you know, Mathurin cut and caught the pass, one dribble.
If I remember it correctly. You obviously looked at the play again before we did this episode. There's no way you're recalling this from memory in the middle of March. Let's be real.
I meant, if I remember correctly, from last night.
Okay.
When I watched it.
I just want to make sure you're not pulling that out of the old memory box from sitting in the studio on March 19th or whenever that was.
I do remember it on March.
Tell me about the, what do you remember from the play three plays before that? Why don't you call that one from memory?
I just remember feeling bad for Eddie Lampkin.
How can you not, man? That's just, and Mathurin's a just awesome, physical, aggressive wing. That part of his game, so clear and obvious to see, and would love to see him continue to flourish in that way at the NBA level, Parrish. He's got tremendous potential because he is an unafraid player and willing and able not just to take it to the rim, but he actually has the capability of putting it on the deck and getting there with some force.
You're making fun, but the truth is I don't always remember things from last night.
That's also true. I know that all too well. I know. I kind of put you out on a ledge there for a second.
So if I remember correctly from last night... And I may or may not, you know, it's a late night. Christian Coloco was credited with the assist. He think has passing ability, although you wouldn't call him a great passer right now. But, you know, he has ability to be a good passer. Also turned it over a little bit, that kind of stuff maybe cancels each other out. The weaknesses you mentioned. Projects as a two-way wing, and I think he can be a two-way wing, but he wasn't a two-way wing at Arizona. And we've talked about this with other prospects, and I think you and I are in agreement here. Unless you don't have the physical tools, capabilities to be a at the very least a good defensive player, then I'm not worried about if you weren't a great defensive player in college. He's 6'6", so he's got good size for a wing. He's a great athlete, moves his feet well, or at least can move his feet well. The problem is he doesn't always move his feet well, but he can. And so, you know, at Arizona, he got, you know, caught up in screens a lot. A lot of ball watching, but I think it's just a focus intensity thing more than a he can't do this thing. So I don't think he was a great two-way wing at Arizona, but he can be a real legitimate two-way wing in the NBA. They, you know, just the fundamentals got to get a little better on defense, and the focus, the desire to be a quality defender has to be there. But there's nothing physically that will prevent him from doing that. And that's why it's if you're, and with these draft profiles, often it's like, these are the strengths, these are the weaknesses. If you're putting a list of weaknesses, what he was on defense at Arizona is a weakness, but I don't know that it's actually a long-term weakness unless he just decides I don't want to do that. And if he doesn't want to do that, then he doesn't need to be picked where I want him to be picked.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Some of the feedback I've gotten on him and some of the workouts he's done is the capability on that side of the ball, on that side of the court, however you want to phrase it, is really good. He has firmed up his top 10 status by basically passing every single possible workout. And he's a guy who the tape, it shows well, and then he looks good getting off the bus, if you will, in workouts. Just there's not a lot not to like about Mathurin and his size, his capability, the defense, that, you know, I am hearing that his ceiling is a bit higher than some might be pinning to the him, and that in part has to do with how he played. Also, I'll mention this. He was able to thrive, relatively speaking. I mean, he was better as a sophomore than he was as a freshman, but he was good as a freshman as well. You know, recruited by Sean Miller, goes to Arizona. Miller leaves. He stays with Tommy Lloyd with the majority of that roster, and then helps turn Arizona into one of the surprise stories in the sport. I mean, the Wildcats were the number one seed in the region and one of the three best teams in the country last season. And it was expected that Arizona would be somewhere between, say, 25 and 50 heading into a season ago. And one of the biggest reasons why they were one of the best teams in the country was the consistent play of Mathurin. I agree with you on the passing. There's no doubt about that. He can be sloppy. He's not a point guard though. He is a wing. Like he will be slotted into the two or the three spot depending on who he plays with, who he's going against. And I do think that he will have a real nice role in an offense, but he needs some definition to his game overall. But still there's plenty of things to be excited about. By the way, little history lesson here. Arizona top 10 picks since the early 90s. Top 10. Bison Dele went 10 in 91. Jason Terry went 10 in 99. In 04, Iggy went number 9. In 05, Channing Frye went 8. 09, a year later, Jordan Hill went 8. In 2015, Stanley Johnson, who in some ways is the closest comp from Arizona guys to what Mathurin is. Stanley Johnson went 8 overall, was a much higher rated and more well-known prospect when he went into Arizona than Mathurin was necessarily. And then your highest picks over the past 25 to 30 years, Damon Stoudemire went 7. Lauri Markkanen went 7 in 2017. Aaron Gordon went 4th in 2014. And your top three picks, Sean Elliott, 89, went 3. Mike Bibby went 2. Mike Bibby went 2, my man, in 1998. I bet you forgot that. Derek Williams famously went 2 in 2011 after having an outrageously good sophomore season, which included a very good NCAA tournament run. And then DeAndre Ayton, who seems to be on his way out of Phoenix, the only number one overall pick that happened in 2018. out of Arizona. Where Mathurin will land eventually among this group is really tough to tell, to be honest. If he had the career of Stanley Johnson, would that be good enough? Would that be acceptable to where he's going to be drafted overall? It feels like that would be falling short of what he should be, but the fit will certainly be intriguing to see wherever he does happen to land. But again, for me, ceiling 6, floor 10, he seems pretty firmed up and locked into that range.
Yeah, he was a sub 100 prospect coming out of high school. He was a part of, I don't know if this is, this is just the way I remember it. It got to a point with the NCAA cloud over the Arizona program that it felt like, you know, like this class that turned Arizona into a one seed in the Pac-12 champ, like it wasn't supposed to. I don't remember it being like that type of class. There was a lot of guys in the class, but
international too.
Yeah, it was heavy on international players and zero top 50 guys. Like I'm looking at it right now. Dalen Terry was 52nd in the class, and he was the highest rated prospect in that class. So this was the Arizona program that was, you know, grabbing McDonald's All-Americans and five-star guys. And then suddenly with this class, that didn't happen. But it was these guys who turned who made Arizona, I think sometimes this, you know, because they were banned from the NCAA tournaments, like they were pretty good in Sean Miller's last season. They just were banned from the NCAA tournament. And then of course, Tommy Lloyd takes over and really, you know, just takes it to a level that I don't think any of us saw coming. We all thought Arizona would be good, but I think most of us stopped short of Arizona will be great in year one under Tommy Lloyd, but they were great. I mean, that was a great basketball team that, you know, could have reasonably won a national championship. And Benedict Mathurin, you know, going from a sub 100 high school prospect to a good freshman to a great sophomore was among the biggest reasons why. And like you mentioned, I don't know that they'll have 3 first round picks guaranteed to have one, but could possibly have 3 first round picks. That's not too big of a stretch, which I guess just underlines the idea that that Arizona roster that was assembled for the most part under Sean Miller was more talented than it projected to be when those guys were enrolling at Arizona.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the reason why Mathurin was able to thrive at Arizona under Tommy this past season, he was highly efficient in dribble handoffs, really, really good cutter. I did check his synergy numbers. You know, he was well over a point per possession when he was going up against both zone defenses, and his ability to make successful reads off of pick and roll. So he has shown good development overall. He is a good pick and roll kind of player, which is another reason why that he'll go in the top 10, because he rates as an excellent player when he faces pick and roll situations, and whether he will be the guy that's rolling, the guy that's looking to pass out of it. I mean, he had well over, you know, 1.15 points per possession scoring, going to the left side. He can use both hands relatively well, which is another benefit to him. And in a lot of the pro sets that Tommy was running, he seemed to have a comfort to it, and he could, he didn't lean to one side of the floor or the other. And he was good in the middle of the shot clock as he was late in the shot clock. He was a good rebounding wing, obviously, you know, for what they were asking him to do. He was opportunistic when needed to be with that, playing on a team that had certainly no shortage of size. He still got his. So all of those things they paint a very convincing picture to a top 10 NBA prospect. He's not a dynamite knockout sure thing. I'm not convinced that he will get to the league and be able to reliably average 15 points a game. He might. I'm just not convinced that'll be the case. Again, it's going to come down to what team wants to take him and what role he'll be asked to do in that once he is drafted there. A reminder, if you're listening to this and you're trying to sort out 6-10. Indiana's at 6, and there is buzz for him to Indiana at 6 at this point. I'd say that's legitimate. Portland has 7. The Pelicans have 8. I'd say that's probably the second noisiest. The Spurs at 9. The Wizards at 10. I'm not going to even pretend that I can sit here and sort through and tell you the details and ins and outs of every single one of those roster situations with all those teams. But in the few conversations I have had about him with people at that level, it's believed that his fit is best with Indiana at this point, or at least in anticipation of what the Indiana roster situation will be. I wonder if they will go that high. If Indiana's sitting there at 6 and he's there, if they do wind up taking him, or if they, like, if Shaedon Sharpe, who we've talked about, will they wind up going with him there? Where Mathurin winds up falling is going to be an intriguing plot line to me, GP, on draft night as we're doing this on HQ next week, because I think basically once you get to 6, if Indiana doesn't take him, then you present Portland. And if Portland doesn't take him, you present NOLA. And if NOLA doesn't, you present the Spurs and then the Wizards, where you know you have something here that's pretty good. And is it going to be a situation where you're going to wind up taking him, or will another team kind of throw a curveball at you and muck it up just a little bit? I don't know. I don't know where he will land, but I think that he is well built to probably adapt at pretty much any of those situations. The Wizards to 10 would be the worst case scenario, not just because it's the last spot in the top 10. And I can't see him going to the Knicks at 11. The Wizards just have the worst situation of any of those teams. I think clearly and by far, if you're Mathurin and you're in his camp, you're hoping by any means just get us to anywhere but that spot at 10.
Yeah, I think by the time, let's just focus on New Orleans for a minute, because I think that's an interesting franchise, you know, in this moment. By all indications, they're going to max out Zion despite all of the weight and injury problems, which I agree with, by the way. You just can't. What are you supposed to do? He's a generational talent. And he's still very young. You just got to hope that it works itself out. And doing anything other than offering the max seems short-sighted and actually riskier than giving him the max. So if Zion's going to be the centerpiece of what you're doing, you know, the way you surround them seems obvious to everybody. Duke was awesome when Zion was at Duke. Because they didn't go to the Final Four, people called that team was awesome. They just didn't go to the Final Four. It happens sometimes. But one of the real roster issues there was they did not have him surrounded by shooters. And he was overwhelming and unstoppable, despite the fact he had no space to operate in, which just speaks to his talent and strength and all of that stuff. But in the NBA, you want to surround him with shooters. And so I would, if I'm New Orleans, I'm prioritizing that in this draft. There aren't many franchises that if I'm picking in the top 10, I'm actually looking at fit as opposed to best player available. But in New Orleans, I kind of am looking for fit as well, because I'm trying to find somebody who fits with Zion. And, you know, Benedict Mathurin is a wing who can shoot. So if you look at most mock drafts, there's probably by the time you get to 8, there's 6 guys that are off the board. And you know, it's Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, Shaedon Sharpe. Like, those 6 seem like they'll be off the board. So depending on what Portland does, like, I'm looking at 8. I'm looking at Benedict Mathurin if he's there, AJ Griffin if he's there, Oche Agbaji if he's there. Like, those are the 3 guys I'm looking at right there, because I do think they are at least under consideration for best player available, but they're all what? Guys who play on the wing who can really shoot it.
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the same time, still different players. Like,
yeah, different players, but they all check that box.
Yes.
Wings who can shoot. And so, you know,
if you're looking for the toughest player of those 3, I would say that's Mathurin, in my opinion. I think he is the most durable, toughest, hard-nosed of those 3, in my opinion.
Yeah, I could argue for any of those 3 over each. I think they're all in the same range, you know, in that 6-12 range. I could argue for, you told me, hey, here's 10. Hey, if like
if LIV Golf wanted to offer me $400 million to argue for any of them, I could probably make a decent argument for any of them. But if I'm like, if you're Mathurin, like that's what you're looking at, and franchises are looking for players like him. So he won't be around too long. I don't think he'll be. I believe he's got an invite to the green room. I don't think he'll be the last guy sitting in the green room.
He will not. Nope.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again listening to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. At Apple, leave a nice review. More of us than there are of them. And I think the plan is to be back tomorrow morning.
That's right.
June 16th.
That's right.
Where we will discuss.
That's right.
If I remember correctly from That's yesterday, right. Jalen Duren. Little old Jalen Duren.
Prepare and strap in. I might just turn my mic off for this entire next episode.
Little old Jalen Duren. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.